This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the American Monetary Association's podcast, where we explore how monetary policy impacts the real lives of real people and the action steps necessary to preserve wealth and enhance one's lifestyle.
Welcome to the podcast for the American Monetary Association. This is your host, Jason Hartman, and this is a service of my private foundation, the Jason Hartman Foundation. Today, we have a great interview for you, so I think you'll enjoy it. And comment on our website or our blog post. We have a lot of resources there for you, and you can find that at AmericanMonetaryAssociation.org. That's AmericanMonetaryAssociation.org, or the website for the foundation, which is JasonHartmanFoundation.org. Thanks so much for listening, and please visit our website and enjoy our extensive blog and other resources there. It's my pleasure to welcome Mark Everson to the show. He is the vice chairman of Alliant Group, the former CEO of the American Red Cross, the former IRS commissioner, Republican presidential candidate for 2016. Mark, welcome. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you on the show. You got some good, solid experience out there in a variety of things. What got you into the race, and why do you want to be president?
I think, like most Americans, I'm pretty concerned about the country. I'm 60. I'll be 61 in September. And I think that I can remember back when we put a man on the moon, and we just don't seem to have that drive or that self-confidence anymore. And you mentioned my experience. I have extensive private sector experience. I've run a factory. I've run businesses in the United States and overseas, lived in Turkey, France, and Zambia. And on the other hand, I have a lot of executive branch experience. I had 6 years under Reagan, 6 years under the second President Bush. And that's more than anybody in the Republican field. I think if we're going to tackle these issues that we really must confront, you need somebody who has a complete picture of both the government and the private sector.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fantastic. The government and the private sector, definitely. What are some of your positions on various issues?
Your listeners can go to, they can either Google me, M-A-R-K, Everson, E-V-E-R-S-O-N, or they can go to Mark, F-O-R, America.com. And that lays out my positions, which are geared towards our prosperity, renewing our prosperity, a path to prosperity, and that would include significant tax reform. I would put in a hybrid system, put in a consumption tax on goods and services that we all would pay, but you would then be able to strip out 150 million Americans from the income tax code. If a couple's earning $100,000 or less, they wouldn't have to file an income tax return anymore. It would return the income tax to where it started a century ago, where it was just a tax on higher earners, and you'd be able to do that if you make this change and lower the rates from what they pay now. You could also lower the business rate, so we'd be competitive overseas. I also speak on my website about the financial sector. We need to make sure we're pumping up the community banks. They've been dying. We've had too much consolidation into the mega banks, and they've been acting lawlessly, recklessly. Well, we need to hold them accountable.
They own the Senate. Why wouldn't they?
it's atrocious. If you think about them, what I say is they run the light, pay the ticket, and drive on. Yeah. That's no good. It's not working. We need to get small and mid-sized businesses need to be able to get funding. And then the third piece of the economic plank, if you will, is the spending. We're right now, the deficits have come down, and they're under 3%, well under 3%. Fine. That sounds like it's manageable, but it's not, because we already have $18 trillion of debt. And in the out years, the spending is going to creep back up first slowly and then very quickly as older folks, my age group and above, draw these benefits. And if we're not careful, if we don't change our entitlement programs, they're going to eat our lunch. That's the other thing we need to do on the economy. So though that's prosperity. I also talk about security. We need to restore our security, and the way we do that is we change from what the president's been doing. He believes in, I think he's been true to his word here, from the get-go, he campaigned on the idea, well, I will deal with our adversaries. We need to chuck that and go back to the traditional system that served us well, where we say we look at our interests and the interests of our allies. That's where we should start our foreign policy. And with a strong military, that we just, you're careful on its use, of course. You can't be reckless on its use, but we can't be in the situation that we've been in now. The last piece of this is about realizing our shared destiny. And I would suggest to you that we've lost this traditional approach to our nation. I was 6 and a half when President Kennedy took the oath of office. He said, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. We've got to get back to some sort of notion where people are proud to be Americans and they will sacrifice for the nation. So I'm suggesting a couple things. I'm suggesting that we put in a program of national service, which would include a military component. I'm concerned that the burden of service to the military is uneven. I live down in Mississippi. In Mississippi, which is the poorest state in the nation, you're twice as likely to be a Gulf era vet than if you live in Connecticut, which is the richest state. So we got to do that. And then on the immigration side, I believe that we need to secure the borders. Absolutely. We need to put in the E-Verify so that people can't get jobs here unless they're entitled to get a job. We need to change the legal system. And then once you do this and you choke off the future illegal immigration, you're left with the question of what do you do with the folks who are here, not the criminal aliens. You got to get rid of them. People are committing crimes. But the folks who are contributing, who are working a part of the community, what are you going to do about those 10 or 12 million people? I suggest that we renew our tradition of assimilation. I want to get a path to citizenship because I'm very concerned. I've lived in France. I've seen they don't have a tradition of assimilation there. I worry that we're not going to be able to confront radical Islam if we don't all get on the same page and pull together. So that's what I want
to
do.
Talk to us about maybe some comparisons between you and some of the other candidates, especially, of course, the guy who's stealing the spotlight, and that's Trump, Donald Trump. Many people have speculated that he's the Ross Perot that's meant to divide the party and really help the liberals. Just all sorts of speculation there. I don't know about any of that, but what are your thoughts?
Well, it is true. Mr. Trump was, I would say, a big city New York liberal Democrat until pretty recently. He was down the line on all of the Democratic issues just 10 or 15 years ago. So the question is, what are his true positions? I think that what he said about immigration is just atrocious. It's a very real issue. It needs to be addressed, as we just said, but it doesn't mean you can demonize immigrants. I mean, he calls Mexicans criminals, rapists, the majority of them criminals and rapists, and takes advantage of these horrible things like this terrible murder in San Francisco. I just tell you this. My sister, years ago, was the victim of a serial murderer in 1982. Oh. He happened to be a black man, but that doesn't make serial murderers black men, and it doesn't make a majority of black men serial murderers. I mean, what he's done is horrible here. It is a difficult situation. Cite Perot. I mean, what happens here if he decides to take his marbles and go home and run on his own? That's going to be very difficult. And if the country ends up with Hillary Clinton as president, I'm not for that.
It just blows my mind. I mean, it's boggling that we could literally end up with a Clinton and a Bush again. I mean, America, that is so unlike the original intent of America, that we would have these dynasty-type families, the Kennedys, the Clintons, Bushes, controlling our public sector. That's absurd. I mean, I can't even believe that.
There's great truth to that. I agree with you 100%. And I can tell you, as I travel Iowa and New Hampshire, people respect, of course, that it's both President Bush, and they respect Governor Bush, of course. But I don't believe that anybody that I've met thinks it's a great idea to go down that path that you've suggested we're on the cusp of going down. That is troubling, very troubling. That's the best we can do. Look, I'm from Mississippi. I recognize my path is narrow, but the kids around in Mississippi, they say, gosh, that's great. Somebody who is going to run for president, the people in the community say, we need a fresh face. They don't want retreads of the past.
Yeah, I would totally agree with you. I would totally agree with you. There's no reason we should have this kind of power consolidated into, you know, certain families who have these dynasties. That's just beyond ridiculous. What do you think about some of the other candidates, and contrast yourself with them, if you would?
Well, I think that where I am is I am hopefully attractive to some of the real conservatives. One thing we didn't talk about is I've got a very clear record where I execute the laws as written, not as I might wish them to be. Wouldn't matter whether it's Chuck Grassley or Chuck Schumer. They would both say that when I ran the IRS, I called them down the middle. I'm very concerned about what this president has done, his executive branch overreach. But I do believe that if the Republicans are to prevail, we need to have somebody who's attractive to this center. One reason I took this on is I've been in 30 states around the country and in the last couple of years. And I believe that, yes, there is one, there are two sort of edges. There's a, let's call it the Elizabeth Warren side and then the Ted Cruz side. But then those folks are not going to move. But I do believe that the majority of people are not as wedded to one side or the other. They are looking for reasonable policy solutions that are justified based on facts rather than just political interests. So I think one of the things that I can do is be attractive across a range of opinions, if you will, some of the positions I've taken. Like on the bank, some of the Republicans would, you know, knee-jerk, just defend Wall Street. I'm not doing that. So I think that that's an important position.
Wall
or the
Street
taxes,
is the,
it's a different approach.
Wall Street is the modern version of organized crime.
It's unbelievable. Everything is tilted towards the big player. We need to get it back to where we have a sense of confidence for small and mid-sized businesses.
If anybody thinks they're a capitalist and they support big, giant, mega corporations and Wall Street, that's not capitalism. That is massive cronyism. That nothing could be further from capitalism than these giant, mega multinationals. They're only capitalist in theory, okay?
Right. One other thing that concerns me, you ask where I contrast some of the other candidates. I'm very concerned about executive branch overreach, and this president has done a bunch of it. What I sort of flabbergasted that the Congress gave him more power by allowing him to do this Iran deal, and whatever you think about it, and I don't particularly like it. I think it's very risky, but it should have come to the Senate as a treaty requiring 2/3 vote for ratification. Instead, the Congress passed a law. All the president has to do is get 1/3 vote, and he's done. That's ridiculous. That's a horrible thing for us to have done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Curious, you know, this isn't talked about really much at all, but line item veto, do you have any thoughts on that? Maybe it's just not something
It's been tried quite a bit. Yeah. I would sign a bill that would provide that authority to the president if it would withstand the court scrutiny. I think the main point is, you can't be afraid to veto things. I would suggest that too often what happens is a president of the same party will believe that he has to support what his party has done. I think that's wrong. What you need to do is you need to worry about your constitutional responsibility. You're the leader of the executive branch. This gets me to another point that is part of my platform. I'm running for a single term in office. I served in two very different administrations, 6 years under Reagan and 6 years under the second President Bush. Very different administrations. But I will tell you this, it was totally consistent by year three, up and down the line. People are worried about the real act, and that's wrong. When you get into that office or you're in that administration, everybody up and down the line should be worrying about the country's interests only and not whether they're going to move back to Seattle or talking to their wife or their husband and say, geez, we just got here. We're going to have to go back to Toledo. Now, I mean, that's ridiculous. So very important that we handle this and understand that the president's got to call this and take care of the national interest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, very good, very good. Obamacare.
I think that there's an opportunity now that the president has this big victory in the court. And by the way, I find this victory very concerning. Again, it's the same thing. He's had all this overreach on the executive powers with the immigration, on the willy-nilly changing the Affordable Care Act. I don't like what the court did here. It said you've got a statute that was poorly drawn, and instead of sending it back to the Congress, it said, In that case, the executive can fix it. And I think that just gives more power to the executive branch, which is dead wrong. That having been said, I think we ought to make a series of changes to it. We ought to move. I'd start with the definition of what's full-time work. The fact is, by lowering that threshold from 40 to 30 hours, whole sectors, retail, hospitality, entertainment, it's gutted the number of people who are working 35, 37 hours. I've changed that. I'd allow the insurance companies to sell across state lines.
When that debate was raging, it seemed so obvious that if we could just create a little more competition in the market and let them cross state lines, that would have been a huge step in the right direction.
And you can say to these insurance companies, you want to sell into a second state? Well, you got to take care of the rural people too, not just the cities. You can put some conditions on it and still let them compete, and you get a better solution. Absolutely. I'd do some tort reform in there. I'd throw that in there, too. And it's interesting. There were people who were talking about that. At the time, Democrats would have gotten some moral if they wanted if they'd given the Republicans some tort reform. But as you know, the problem with the statute is it came in by the narrowest of margins, so there's no ownership to it on the Republican side. It's got to be addressed and quickly, because I question whether it's meeting its objective. It's not as important whether these people are covered by insurance as it is are people using the Medicare and getting healthier. And I'm worried about the increase you're seeing in the premiums and in the deductibles. My indications, people tell me stories, a lot of folks, they have the insurance, but they're not using it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Back to that line item veto for a second. It seems like that would really, really hold a president accountable, because on every piece of pork barrel legislation, you could say, look, you didn't veto this or that. It would just totally hold them accountable to the voters, you know, and next time around, wouldn't have the power of the incumbency if they abused that line item veto.
That could work, but again, I think the president should just be more willing to veto things to begin with. Say, take these six provisions out and I'll sign it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there anything else you'd like people to know in general? A question maybe that I didn't ask you, or, you know, just anything you'd like to share with the audience?
No, I think, listen, what I'm doing is I respect our democratic processes. I've got active campaign in Iowa and New Hampshire. I don't like the idea that Wall Street or these big donors are trying to buy this election. If your folks, your listeners, are concerned about this, as am I, they should go to markforamerica.com. I can use their help. I can use a modest donation. I can use their email so we can reach out to them, get them the help. But it's time for us to stand up and make some changes. I just don't think that the traditional politicians are going to do it.
Mm-hmm. No, they're not going to do it. Someone from the outside really needs to be in there, because these political operatives just, it's going to be the status quo all the way. And God forbid we get a Clinton or a Bush. That'll even be more of it. So very interesting. Well, good stuff. Well, thank you for joining us, Mark, and talking about some of this stuff. One last question for you, maybe. Talk to us about that power structure around getting the opportunity to get your views out there and the admission to the debates. What is going on there? I remember watching a program years ago about Ralph Nader and how he was excluded from the debates. What happens there?
Well, I'm one of 18 candidates that the Republican National Committee has on their website. And totally legitimate. They recognize the nature of the positions I've held. I have more experience on taxes, immigration, on Homeland Security, helped create the Homeland Security Department. So that's all very relevant to the issues that the country is facing right now. What we need to do is make sure that CNN, they'll hold the next debate, make sure that your listeners are in touch with them and say, hey, geez, get this fellow on, because we can't run a system where only we draw our presidents from 150 governors and senators or somebody who's uber wealthy like Mr. Trump. We need to leave room for folks who are leaders, like a university president or a retired general or admiral or a cabinet officer. We need those citizens to be able to come forth and contest and bring forth ideas. That's what I'm doing, and I can use the help of your listeners.
Yeah, good stuff. Give out your website one more time, Mark.
Mark, M-A-R-K, 4-F-O-R, America.com.
Mark Everson, thank you so much for joining us.
The American Monetary Association is a nonprofit venture funded by the Jason Hartman Foundation, which is dedicated to educating people about the practical effects of monetary policy and government actions on inflation, deflation, and personal freedom. Our goal is to help people prosper in the midst of uncertain economic times. This show is produced by the Jason Hartman Foundation, all rights reserved. For publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate professional if you require individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of the Jason Hartman Foundation exclusively.